Join the Toronto Holocaust Museum and its partners for a community-wide Yom HaShoah commemoration on Sunday, May 5th. A moving evening of film, candlelighting, music, and a tribute to survivors we've recently lost. Keynote speaker Yoni Berus from Yad Vashem will reflect on Holocaust remembrance post-October 7th. The program is at Beth Emeth Synagogue at 7 p.m. Register at torontoholocaustmuseum.org.
Busy at the kosher meat section this weekend at a Toronto supermarket as shoppers loaded up their grocery carts ahead of next week's Passover Seder meals. But some shoppers certainly were doing a double take at the price of some of the beef this year. Single cut briskets, $51 a kilo. London broil, $65 a kilo. Pickled brisket was actually on sale at only $28 and change, but normally it goes for $67.25 a kilo. One Toronto rabbi told me he was experiencing sticker shock at the prices for Passover food this year. And all this as Canada's kosher meat industry is embroiled in a very public legal fight right now with the federal government, accusing Ottawa of violating their Charter of Rights to Religious Freedom by changing the regulations governing animals destined for slaughter. Last summer, inspectors started enforcing these new rules that are aimed at improving animal welfare. But Canada's two kosher agencies say it'll put the domestic kosher meat producers out of business. But who's right? How painless is Jewish ritual slaughter of beef anyway? And is the dispute purely about freedom of religion, or is it also about money and preserving the kosher slaughter industry's jobs?
I can't imagine that there is anybody in this world that is stupid enough to use CFAA's current standard. I mean, it appears to be a way of saying we're not anti-Semitic, but we'll just regulate you to the point where you can't do it.
I'm Ellen Besner, and this is what Jewish Canada sounds like for Monday, April the 15th, 2024. Welcome to the CJN Daily, a podcast of the Canadian Jewish News, sponsored by Metropia. The updated federal slaughter laws make it mandatory to stun an animal with a bolt to the brain before slaughter happens. But the rabbis feel doing this may violate Jewish religious law, and so Canada gave the kosher and the halal meat producers an option. They could either do the stunning after, or they can wait and watch for three neurological signs that the animal is fully unconscious before it's moved off for butchering. The kosher industry says by slowing down the time an animal takes to go through the slaughter line, it cuts the company's daily output a lot and makes the kosher business venture downright cost prohibitive. So the rabbis have done a workaround in the meantime to keep things running quicker for adult beef. Since last year, they've permitted the animals to be bolt stunned after ritual slaughter. But they don't want to keep this up permanently because some kosher customers don't accept this meat. Should Canada's kosher beef industry survive? And what's at stake? We have two interviews. First, Rabbi Alan Nadler, an Orthodox commentator in Montreal, says that's inappropriate to use the anti-Semitism card when, in fact, Jewish law obligates the community to prioritize animal welfare, and certainly to prioritize it over the profit margins of the kosher industry. Rabbi Nadler is an emeritus professor at Drew University in New Jersey. He was the rabbi at Montreal's Shar HaShemayim Synagogue, and he even visited a Montreal abattoir as part of his rabbinic training. When you heard about this, what went through your mind?
Well, I initially learned about this by reading an article, and I was shocked. I was shocked on many levels, but primarily because the way the story was cast, it was about the Holocaust, you know, the Hamas massacres in October, anti-Israel demonstrations. I mean, 80% of the article was a summary of all the gripes that we have legitimately about and concerns about rising anti-Semitism that went on. It began with Hitler and the Holocaust, talked about pogroms and about anti-Semitic demonstrations. And it was all about anti-Semitism and Jew hatred. And there wasn't a single line discussing the halachic issue. And that to me is key. Do these regulations for more humane slaughtering violate the halacha? The two key issues: we don't live in prehistoric times or ancient temple times. We know that animals suffer physically and emotionally. It's also a halachic issue. There is this principle of tzar balei chayim. The halacha mandates that we minimize and avoid any unnecessary harm to animals. So there, it's not just a humanitarian question, it's a halachic question, because the halacha also mandates that we be humane and ethical and moral in our treatment of other creatures. But the key halachic question is, does this present a real problem for kashrut? As a rabbi myself, I happen to know the answer to that question. It's pretty clear it is not a problem. Post-shechita stunning of an animal has been permitted by the two greatest halachic authorities of the 20th century, Rabbi Chaim Ozer Grudzinski, the rabbi of Vilna, and Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the rabbi of New York City, the great decisor of Jewish law in America, in the history of the United States. He is the greatest halachic authority. And both of them were very, very clearly allowed stunning. In the case of Chaim Ozer, stunning was done in an even more brutal way. It was done with a club of some kind, or hammer of some kind. Today we have the electronic thing, which is much more subtle and exquisite, and it relieves the animal of the consciousness of dying. And because the halacha, with regard to shechita, technically is not, there's no problem. The animal is not a trefa or not considered ill or damaged, as it may be if the stunning is done before shechita. I say maybe because I don't want to get too technical here. I know this is for a general audience, but in the rabbinic halacha, a trefa is an animal that has an internal disease to its organs, cows most often the lungs, which is why we inspect the lungs after shechita. Such an animal is simply distributed for non-kosher meat distribution. I'm sorry for going into all these technicalities.
No, it's actually super helpful, but I want to go back to what you said. So yes, you talked about Rabbi Feinstein, you talked about the other rabbi, the rabbinical assemblies. Yeah, the rabbinical assembly's ruling. Now, this is for conservative Judaism, but
right.
The rabbinical assembly, I read it, and it says post-shechita stunning is A-okay.
Yep.
The reason that they were worried about it was because of blood spots. In other words, if you don't let the animal bleed out, then the blood gets into their internal organs. It doesn't stay in the blood vessels. You can still kosher the meat by salting it and soaking it, and it's still okay.
Yeah.
But the hindquarters are not consumed by Jews. It usually gets sold to the non-Jewish meat market. And then because they pay a premium for like a roast or a hind roast, then kosher meat is cheaper. And so win-win on everyone's part. But because if you do it when the blood gets into these hindquarters, they have to sell it as hamburger, and therefore kosher meat gets more expensive. So it's an economic issue for them. It wasn't an animal suffering issue at all. And it wasn't a shechita breaking the laws of kashrut. It was an economic issue, period. And so that's why they said it's said
exactly
right there.
Right.
It's rabbinical conservative, so the Orthodox may not accept it. But how do you see that explanation?
First of all, I want to make a point, since you alluded to the fact that the Orthodox may not accept the conclusions of conservative rabbis, the rabbinical assembly, that is, there's a committee on law and standards. Let me just add, I'm an Orthodox ordained rabbi, and one does not evaluate legal decisions based on party affiliation, whether it's the Supreme Court in Canada or the United States and who appointed them. The affiliation of a rabbi in a movement of modern Judaism, which is an artifice, there's no halachic category called conservative Orthodox reform. And so I judge every tshuva, every responsum, on its inherent halachic merits. And I have to say, As an Orthodox ordained rabbi, no longer affiliated with Orthodoxy, the Conservative Movement's Committee on Law and Standards historically has issued hundreds of responsa that are as solid, as learned, and as well thought through as maybe not the tshuvot, the best tshuvot of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, but the best tshuvot of most other Orthodox rabbis. So I think you got it exactly right. The bottom line here is an economic, it's fiscal, it's a fiscal bottom line. It's not an inherently halachic problem. Blood can be removed through soaking and salting. And the issue is the price of kosher meat. So as it is now, It's pretty clear that the concern has nothing to do with the laws of kashrut, by which I mean they say now they're stunning after shchita, which means they accept that stunning after shchita does not render the meat unkosher. I mean, otherwise they wouldn't be certifying it kosher and allowing Jews to eat meat that is even safek, even questionably unkosher. So having established that stunning after shchita does not present a Jewish legal kashrut problem, now all we're talking about is money. We're just talking about the added expense. The added expense to the consumer and the diminished profits of Mahadran and Continental and the retailers of the meat, right? So this is all about their bottom line. And from my perspective, I think it's abhorrent to suggest that the suffering of a living being is only worth so many dollars and cents. And that's, to put it very bluntly, that's what we're talking about. That's the way I see it.
The lawsuit does say that because it's not just that, but because the abattoirs or slaughterhouses in English don't want to get penalized and tickets and fines and get shut down, which has been happening. And so they just, they're like, okay, we're getting out of this business. Bottom line is there's no more kosher slaughter going to be done in Canada. There were four, now there's only two. So that's a concern to save the kosher slaughter industry in Canada. Your thoughts?
Why do they have to shut down? They have to shut down because they're not sufficiently profitable to stay in business. I mean, I inherently trust science and experts, right? And I assume that the Canadian government is reliant on expert opinions about animal welfare and ethics.
What would it mean to you if there was no more kosher meat being produced in Canada? Because that's, they do all the slaughter for all of Canada, 80% for Mahadran, 20% for Sheffa, that's it, and exports. So they'll all go out of business and everything
well,
will have
just
to
said
be imported.
They do all the slaughter. They do all the slaughter for the 30% of kosher meat that's bought on shelves in Canada. About 70%, more than 60, I don't know the exact numbers. That's, again, not my field. The large majority of kosher meat that you, the bulk of kosher meat that one buys at IGA or Metro or any of the stores, Loblaws in Ontario, most of that is imported kosher meat. So it's simply not true to say all the meat in Canada that's coated, you know. And that brings me, if I may segue into, without being asked, the question of how, I mean, this lawsuit with which we began, how in the world can you make a case that the civil rights of Jews are being denied by these regulations? I mean, that's a very serious accusation, that Jews are being denied the right to practice their religion. I don't see that a single Jew will be deprived of a single human right ensured by the Charter in Canada and the Quebec Charter, freedom to practice their religion. It's almost a chilul Hashem. I know that's a strong term, but I mean, I really feel that, you know, invoking the Holocaust and then accusing the government of anti-Semitism, even by implication, well, we don't know if they're motivated by anti-Semitism. It cheapens the memory of the Holocaust. It undermines us when we experience true anti-Semitism. I don't see any anti-Semitism here. I'm sorry. And I'm not naive about anti-Semitism. I'm a passionate Zionist. I make no apologies about that. To your question, even if every slaughterhouse in Canada, well, there's only two, there are only two or three in Quebec, and they're all in, here in Quebec, even if they shut down, kosher meat will still be available. Just get another 20, 30% from Mexico, Brazil, Argentina, you know, the South American countries where they're coming from. Europe does that. Israel does that. This is not a civil liberties matter.
Wouldn't it be a shame, though, that an industry that's been in Montreal, in Quebec, it was in Ontario, it was out west as well, is going to disappear if the rabbis decide that they aren't going to comply, and all these, we won't get Canadian kosher beef anymore. We'll have to eat American beef. That's something that, for me as a consumer, I wonder what that will mean.
Well, I'm not a steak connoisseur, so I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between an Alberta cow and a Montana cow. You know, we're a Wyoming cow, you know, I don't know. So, but if you're talking about the shame of the loss of the end of Schlachthäusen, that's the Yiddish term you use, slaughterhouse and abattoir, so the old Schlachthäusen. Listen, when I was a rabbinical student, We were required to go and witness the shechita of animals. And we went to a slaughterhouse in the east end of Montreal. This was in the early 1970s when I was studying at Merkas HaTorah. And I didn't eat meat for 18 months after that. I was so sickened by what I saw, the screaming of the cows, the blood gushing out, hung by their legs. They don't do that anymore, I understand. The hoist, horrible. So would I mourn the fact that that's not happening on the island of Montreal or in Laval? Not at all. I mourn the loss of Yiddish language and literature and culture and chazanut and all kinds of, but this is not exactly a cultural treasure. If the animals are being slaughtered outside of the city in which I live, I'm actually happier about it. That's just my personal sense. I don't. What's the great loss?
It would be a significant drop in use of Canadian beef industry, because they do grow the cows here, and that would mean that, you know, the farmers, it's like a whole trickle down, the cattle ranchers, then the transport people. It's a whole economic industry that will suffer. Although, to be fair, if they only do 1,000 or 1,400 cows a year now, so it's on its way out anyway.
The effect of the closing of two small abattoirs, or parts of larger abattoirs in Quebec, too, with a tiny percentage. I don't know what it's probably a fraction of 1% of the total consumption. Much more damage has been done to the meat industry, and this I certainly don't mourn. But the environmental movement and vegetarianism and veganism, the plant-based, you know, burgers that you can get at McDonald's, A&W, that is making a massive, that is hurting the beef industry in a massive way, whereas this would be insignificant, almost unnoticeable. So I'm not concerned about that.
What about yourself? Do you eat meat? And do you eat kosher?
I eat meat, yeah. Yes. I am I'm a
carnivore. You eating as much as you used to?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. On a personal level, yes. I'm a hypocrite. I eat meat. I love meat. I'm not going to stop eating it, but I should. Also, as an environmentalist, you know, I care about the environment, and meat is cows. Oof, they're terrible for the environment.
And you don't care. You don't look for Montreal versus outside. Doesn't it affect when you shop or where your meat comes from?
Not at all. Listen, I'm a great Montreal. I moved back from New York to Montreal as soon as I retired from my position. There's nothing I love more than a Montreal smoked meat sandwich, you know? But I don't care where the meat comes from. I don't see any downside, seriously, except for the loss of jobs for the Shochtim. But they can find jobs in Iowa.
Does it not bother you that maybe they're not doing the meat the way you should think that it's being done humanely in Argentina? I mean, I don't know, but Argentina, Mexico, you don't check, right? So it's not an ethical thing for you where your meat comes from.
And that's a fair question, but I mean, that's a question you could ask anyone who loves animals who eats meat, you know? I mean, it's a problem, but it's not my responsibility to check that's the government's responsibility. I can't impact regulations, but I can support the Canadian government, and I'm frankly proud of the Canadian government that they're doing this. They're taking this seriously. I think it's the right thing to do. It's the Jewishly ethical thing to do. It's more important than any profit margin, you know, to diminish the suffering of animals. I mean, you can't eliminate it, but you can minimize it. It'll never be humane. If you want to be truly humane, stop killing animals and become a vegetarian or a vegan. I mean, you're absolutely right.
So as far as pricing, what do you notice now about the price of kosher meat, and how worried, if at all, are you that this lawsuit and the perhaps end of kosher slaughter, or they have to change the way they do it, might impact prices even more?
I mean, kosher meat is more expensive than non-kosher meat, right? That's a given. So let's say it becomes 3 to 5% more expensive. If you're a kosher consumer, you can absorb that. Easy for me to say. Again, I'm not a ultra-Orthodox Jew with 10 kids in the house. So I don't want to be cavalier about that or insensitive, but I mean, you're already paying way too much. I shop at the Hasidic, every Friday I go to Utrecht and shop at those Hasidic shops because I love the junk food, the tigel and the kishka and the, you know, and the prices are outrageous, but it's kind of fungible. We're talking about a single digit increase in the cost to the consumers, right? And if you're willing to absorb, if you're willing to do that, you should be willing to pay another few percentages more and know that animals are not needlessly suffering.
Professor Joe Regenstein, Emeritus Food Sciences Professor at Cornell University in Ithaca, New York. He's one of the world's foremost experts on ritual slaughter, and he's been advising these two kosher Canadian agencies in their court case. He feels Canada's being unreasonably conservative when it comes to humane slaughter and relying on outdated suggestions adopted from Dr. Temple Grandin 20 years ago, an American scientist who revolutionized the way animals were slaughtered. He joins me now.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Can you take us through your involvement in this story?
I am trained as a chemist. I am not a biologist. I got into kosher and halal early in my career, avoided slaughter for much of it. And around the year 2000, I was brought into the Food Marketing Institute, which is the supermarkets and chain restaurants effort at animal welfare, because they knew they had to deal with kosher and halal. And since then, I've learned an awful lot about animal welfare and have for years looked at the literature, looked at various things going on, including what's gone on in the European Union with Belgium and all of that. Let me step back and frame one or two things to give a context. I assume you've run across the name Temple Grandin, the autistic woman who specializes in working in animal welfare issues. I consider Temple a friend. I wrote her promotion letters for both our full professor and associate professor. So, and she's been on both of the major committees I've served on. They're very practical ways, as Temple is a very practical person, she's very big on if you can't measure it, you can't fix it. And in that, she has taught the North American animal welfare people that the goal is not to stop the industry, not to tell people what to do, but to show them how to do it better, which is very different from Europe, where it's clear that it's a gotcha that religious slaughter is bad. So there's I think there's a big disparity, which made me a little surprised at what's going on in Canada. Some number of years ago, a human medical doctor in the United Kingdom, actually in London, by the name of Stuart Rosen, kind of wrote a summary very much from a Jewish Shechita perspective. He is an Orthodox Jew. He's actually a member of Shechita UK, and he's in the loop of people working on the Canadian issue. But when he wrote this paper, both Dr. Grandin, Temple Grandin, and I read the paper very carefully. And there was one sentence that neither of us could buy it. And that was that cattle, and we'll focus on cattle because they're in some ways, the most difficult to slaughter. In 2 seconds, they lost consciousness. And that, to both Temple and myself at that time, appeared to be way faster than any other data suggested. When I talked to him 2 weeks ago, I apologized. He was probably right, and the rest of us are all wrong. What has happened is through the Canadian Jewish community working on this, the two VODs and the meat packers, they brought in a human neurobiologist who has been synthesizing the animal literature with the really up-to-date human brain research. And what seems to be the critical point here is, where does unconsciousness occur in the brain? When you cut the neck and have rapid expulsion of blood, what actually happens? And where, in relationship to issues of pain specifically, does what's happening in that sector versus what's happening in other sectors of the brain? And what is fascinating is the biological mechanisms do try to protect the brain. And the more recent research is showing that, in fact, when there is this dramatic loss of blood, the attempt to save the brain is not uniform. It goes to certain parts of the brain and lets other parts of the brain kind of go by the wayside. most of us have always focused on the brain stem, which is responsible for many of the motions, reflexes that Temple and other scientists say we need to deal with. And in religious slaughter, an animal becomes unconscious, but doesn't become brain dead until slightly later. With many of the other techniques, the two are condensed. But the critical piece here is that pain is in the cerebral cortex. And when that acute event occurs, the cerebral cortex is not one of the parts of the brain that the body tries to save. But that part that's going down is the point that feels pain. So all of the measurements we're making are probably after unconsciousness had occurred. And Temple's data, as officially reported in the what is called the North American Meat Institute Slaughter Guidelines, she says that it takes, I believe it's 10 to 15 seconds for loss of posture, which is the official measure. If an animal lost its posture, it can be declared unconscious, which means you can begin to move it. You cannot begin to do invasive cutting until you actually have the brainstem death, which is the loss of all those reflexes.
So you said you had to apologize because you think unconsciousness is after 2 seconds, not what Temple Grandin said.
I think by the time she's got loss of posture, the animal already has been unconscious. The important point here is we're talking about 15 seconds. The Canadian and all the standards, North American, the American veterinary, which are basically global standards. They've been accepted by some, if not all, of the animal rights groups. And this has worked in the industry. Generally speaking, an animal can be moved out of the restraining pen in 30 seconds. Temple and I encourage, if the animal is clearly not unconscious after 40 seconds, that it be stunned and not necessarily kosher then. There are economic costs because they're probably waiting longer than they have to, but we've all factored that into the system. But the Canadians are now asking for 3 20 seconds apart, repeat measurements of what we've all been doing once maybe, but they've made it so that you can't get to the next animal for at least a minute and a half. And in practice, it's often longer.
You said that Temple Grandin has 3 checklist things. I just want to understand where they got them.
They're the same activities, but we do it when it's negative, we move forward. They're asking for 3 negatives at minimum 20-second intervals. So where is that coming from? We have all operated with animal welfare standards that are probably already too conservative. They have moved in the opposite direction.
Do you understand what's motivating that move?
I do not understand what's motivating that. I am hoping it's not what I would probably say is the answer. Given the history of attitude towards Shechita in Europe, where we know that Islamophobia and anti-Semitism are certainly part of the equation, my hope is that that's not the case in Canada. But how else can you think about why are you going way overboard in making it take much, much longer to do religious slaughter?
So what happens, and in Canada, they are doing post-Shechita bolting now for the last year almost, since July. They said they're doing it because they have no choice, otherwise they would go out of business.
That logic has also been used by Australia, where the community in Australia has accepted that, and there's precedent for the rabbis making that decision. But for example, the rabbis who are doing the slaughter, will not certify the meat for export because it's being done under some kind of halakhic emergency to allow people, but it is not desirable. Both of the Gutniks are not happy with it. They're two brothers, and they basically supervise most of the kosher kill. And I've spoken to both of them. They come to the States occasionally for Kosher Fest. And neither of them are happy with that situation.
What about Mexico? What do they do in Mexico where we get a lot of meat imported into Canada from, kosher meat?
My guess is they are doing not the best on animal welfare, but they're doing traditional unstunned slaughter. Most of Latin America uses is unstunned slaughter.
Because the rules of the CFIA say that they will not allow meat in that doesn't meet CFIA standards, but they aren't enforcing it themselves. It's up to the importing meat companies in Canada to make sure that it's done according to CFIA standards. A lot of the Canadian meat is exported, for example, from Montreal to Chicago, to the kosher stores there. We've seen fresh meat with the MK logo on it just last week. Like, if the Canadian Jewish meat slaughter business is now doing post-shlita bolting if they have to, why don't they save it for Canada? How does it even get out of Canada if you said nobody in the Americas are allowed to take this stuff? I don't understand.
I think that people in America would be very upset to learn that glatt kosher meat is being sold with post-slaughter stunning. If that got out, it would cause quite a scandal, though. I do know that at this moment, there is a real shortage of meat in the Northeast.
So bottom line, what our listeners and our consumers should understand about this story, you think that they're not getting complete science or fair science?
They're misusing the science. They're misusing the science and taking already conservative measurements and tripling their conservativeness without explanation or justification.
Do you eat kosher meat?
Keep a conservative kosher home.
And that's what Jewish Canada sounds like for this episode of the CJN Daily, sponsored by Metropia. Integrity, community, quality, and customer care. While the legal case is still underway, some political lobbying of the federal government has also been taking place behind the scenes. Even Anthony Housefather, the Liberal MP for Mount Royal, confirms he's been trying to help solve the dispute out of court by talking with the Minister of Agriculture. We'd love to hear your thoughts on the whole shechita issue. Will you be buying kosher meat for Passover? Do you mind eating imported meat? What do you think should happen? I'm at ebessner@thecjn.ca. Thanks for listening.